You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, U.S. shot down several surveillance balloons and other objects over American airspace in the last week. We'll get caught up on what's in the sky and how it's affecting relations with China. First, Susanna Michaels joins me for the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep those conversations on the air.
And that's because listener support is the largest piece of funding that makes Central Time and all the other shows that you enjoy possible. And that's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Massive thank yous to everyone who gave last hour through the drive so far, who's already a sustainer. Thank you so much. Well, right now we have, this is great, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000. This very generous match is from people who are already members of Wisconsin Public Radio. That includes a member in Lodi, means that they are going to match every dollar you give.
Right. We love these matches. Thank you so much to everyone who contributed towards that. And they did that because they want to encourage you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So double your support for the programs you love right now when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
They might be thinking, hey, even if my gift is doubled, I'm just one person. I can't give enough to keep Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. That's probably true, but when you join WPR, you're joining more than 50,000 other members. Well, now you start to put that together, your support ends up making the largest source of funding for WPR programs.
Right. So your support, your individual support is powerful because you join together with this amazing group of people and you make all the WPR programs that you enjoy possible and that so many people enjoy. 400,000 people enjoy these programs and you make that happen with your gift. Right now, it gets doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's winter time. If you're like a lot of people, you wear a hat from time to time in our Wisconsin winter. Well, you can get a new one, the all new WPR beanie. It's an olive green hat. It's got the Wisconsin Public Radio logo. It goes with everything, I think. I think I can make that assessment as a resident fashion expert.
Yeah, that's been,
here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Sorry. Didn't mean to laugh, Rob.
You can't see me on the radio. You don't know. Ask for your hat right now. It starts with your gift of $15 or more online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And maybe you remember listening to WPR as a child, or maybe your own kids really enjoy certain programs.
Whether it's an interesting story on NPR News, piece of music, laughing along with weekend shows, WPR sparked your imagination as a child, and it engages the minds of children today.
And you make all of that possible when you participate as a member. And that means making a gift of any amount right now. It will be doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We live in a pretty generous society. We're quick, like, I can quick shovel a line of snow out of my neighbor's sidewalk.
Yep.
Oh, somebody's slipping on that freezing rain that's coming this week. We help push them down the road. We're quick to help out people in need, and we chip in for good causes. And you can continue that tradition of generosity when you support WPR right now.
If you have never given before, we do invite you to step up and give right now. When you do, you'll be funding the programs that you and so many others benefit from every day. Many first-time donors give $100. Better yet, they give $10 a month and become a sustainer. The amount is totally up to you, and this hour that amount is doubled. The important thing is to make your first ever gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, this dollar-for-dollar match, it's great. It's big.
$3,000.
We're going to need some help to match that, so I'd love to get off to a strong start this hour and take full advantage of that very generous gift from current members who are encouraging you, inciting you, daring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio just like they do. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Your support of WPR is going to go twice as far.
And Rob, we heard from Grace in Evansville who says, Central Time fires up my brain just when I need it most. Thank you.
Yeah, me too.
Grace. Yeah. Rob's brain is fired up every day on the show. And that's why we have these shows, because that's what they do for us. And it's a great cause, and it's your support that makes it possible. So join in with your gift at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552.
Thank you so much, Grace. How about you make your gift in support of Wisconsin Public Radio? Get it doubled right now with this dollar-for-dollar match. You can make a difference when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you. This is Central Time. Now, since the United States shot down a Chinese balloon illegally flying across American territory back on February 4th, U.S. officials have found and shot down a few more unidentified objects in the sky. Now, there's no indication so far that those other objects had anything to do with China. But that initial balloon has U.S. authorities looking more closely for slow-moving objects in U.S. airspace, and it added a new stumbling block to already difficult relations between the two countries. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts on that initial balloon from China, how it fits into diplomacy between the two countries, national security concerns. Join in with your questions, your observations for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Fred Kaplan is the war stories columnist for Slate and the author of six books. His latest is The Bomb, Presidents, Generals, and the Secret History of Nuclear War. Fred, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, good to be here.
Let's start with that Chinese balloon. It crossed the country, got shot down a couple weeks back. Information seems to trickle out slowly. What can we say with a fair amount of certainty about that balloon right now?
Well, it now seems that it was a spy balloon, but that the Chinese meant to have it go over Hawaii and Guam, looking at U.S. military sites there, which apparently happens frequently, but that it really was a strong wind that blew it across North America. So the Chinese were half right in their explanation. Remember, they said, oh, it's just a weather balloon that got blown off track. And that was, by that time, U.S. planes had been tracking it and noting the kinds of emissions that were coming out of it and the kind of antennae that it was carrying and so forth. And it was clearly a spy balloon. But things would have gone a lot better if we had been clear about this from the beginning publicly, and if the Chinese had been clear, if they had just said, look, it's the kind of balloon that you know about that is a military balloon, but it drifted off course. Sorry. At the same time, you know, it did cross into U.S. territory. It was a violation of sovereignty. So that was the first screw up, the mutual misunderstanding. And then under political pressure, Biden was being criticized for letting, you know, Xi Jinping was testing his resolve and he failed and we're shown to be weak. And therefore, three other things popped up and we just shot them down. And now they turn out to be really genuine weather balloons, recreational balloons. I mean, it's unclear what they were, but they were not from China. It turns out there are hundreds of these things going over the United States all the time, most of them having nothing to do with national security. And we just got carried away under political pressure. So that's the situation as far as we know it right now.
Now, sticking with the Chinese balloon, the one we know is from China, some people, including callers on this show, have made the case like, hey, we've got satellites over China. China has satellites over the United States. What's the big deal? The balloons are lower. But under international law, there is a pretty big difference between the two. Can you talk about that?
Well, international law, I mean, it did cross into U.S. territory. And, you know, it was 60,000 feet up, and that's still within U.S. airspace. So it was a violation of sovereignty, and they should have come forth and explained what was going on. These kinds of balloons, again, the Chinese have a lot of satellites, just as we do. If these kinds of balloons are mainly flying over U.S. military sites in the Pacific, Hawaii, Guam, and so forth, they don't necessarily have satellites flying over those areas all the time. They could pick up communications intelligence, take pictures at a lower altitude and perhaps more resolution than some of the satellites flying over those areas. So basically, I think what's really going on, they long time ago, we all had spy balloons. Then in the United States, we started getting spy planes and then spy satellites. And eventually we got rid of the spy balloons. You know, we don't need this old tech stuff. I think in China, and maybe to some degree in Russia as well, this spy balloon business had become an enormous bureaucracy, and it just endured. So they do all of the above. Whether the satellite, whether the balloons give them any unique intelligence that they don't get from the other things, probably not much. But it's a bureaucracy in and of itself.
Since this one was downed, we keep seeing reports of another balloon, another balloon. Is that revealing that there are, you know, more spying efforts out there? Or is it like me cleaning my bathtub? Once I start to look in close, I see how dirty it is. Are we just looking really close for balloons and finding junk that was out there?
Yeah, you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you go into your apartment's kitchen and you see some roaches. The roaches didn't begin. You just haven't been looking for them at 3 o'clock in the morning before, right? So same thing, but it turns out there's just a lot of stuff up there. But I think there was so much political pressure not to let this happen again. I mean, we were shooting off missiles that cost $500,000, fired from our most advanced fighter jets, to get what turns out to be, we don't know quite what they were, but they weren't from China and they weren't military in nature. So it just threw us, we got thrown into a panic. Under severe pressure. And you know, I think there are some wider lessons here. You know, the first balloon, which was a military balloon and seemed to be deliberately going over the U.S., wasn't. But we concluded that it was. Luckily, there wasn't any other big crisis going on. Otherwise, the shoot down could have led to something more serious. And then we just got carried away. I mean, the big lesson is, you know, but before you start shooting at things, you should have a better idea of what you're shooting at.
We're talking to Fred Kaplan, the war stories columnist at Slate, looking at the aftermath of the downing of a Chinese balloon after it crossed the U.S. and what it means for U.S.-China relations, diplomacy, and national security. Time for you to call in if you have a question, a thought on all of this at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Fred Kaplan, columnist for Slate, looking at the Chinese balloon shot down after crossing U.S. airspace, looking for more balloons now, and what it all means for U.S.-China relations. I want to give a listen to President Biden addressing those three UFOs, unidentified flag objects, the balloons that were shot down last Thursday, not the Chinese ones, mentioning they were probably from private companies not related to China. Here's a bit of that address.
We seek competition, not conflict with China. We're not looking for a new Cold War, but I make no apologies, and we will compete, and we'll responsibly manage that competition so that it doesn't veer into conflict. This episode underscores the importance of maintaining open lines of communication between our diplomats and our military professionals. Our diplomats will be engaging further, and I will remain in communication with President Xi.
And Fred, that follows up on what you were saying earlier, how to make sure this somewhat random incident doesn't fray already difficult relations and keeping those lines of communications open. What would that look like?
Well, see, this is the potential tragedy behind here. Right before this happened, Secretary of State Antony Blinken was scheduled to go to Beijing. It would have been the first time that a Secretary of State had been to China in 6 years. He was going to meet with President Xi Jinping. And on the agenda, I've been told, was, you know, furthering the discussion that's been going on between Biden and Xi over areas where the U.S. and China can get relations back on track, not with compromising our interests, but looking for avenues where we can engage again, because things are getting out of hand. And once this balloon crossed over U.S. territory, this meeting had to be called off, because that's the only thing that this meeting would have been about. And Blinken met with his Chinese counterpart at the Munich Security Conference a couple days ago. But apparently it was not a harmonious conversation either. It was talking again about the violation of sovereign space and then also about some recent intelligence information that China is considering assisting Russia with lethal weaponry in Ukraine, which they haven't done so far. So this might, this random incident might have, kept U.S.-China relations from getting on a slightly more productive path than where they have been, and could even have exacerbated the war in Ukraine if things turn out. So it's a perfect example of how, very, very random things can sometimes hurl international politics into either a very good or a very tense direction.
Elizabeth from Verona called in, could stay on the line, but she was wondering about past examples of when foreign balloons have maybe been in U.S. airspace. She mentioned the Cold War, remembering hearing about some balloons over the West Coast. Do we have a lot of precedent to dig into, Fred?
Not a whole lot, although, it's now pretty clear that a lot of the UFOs during the late 50s and early 60s, when there was a spate of sightings of unidentified flying objects believed to be, from outer space, from alien, they turned out to be experimental aircraft and experimental balloons of the U.S. Air Force. Not many sightings over the U.S., that there were a lot of U.S. balloons over the Soviet Union and China back in the days before we had satellites. But yeah, it's my view is that these are not, you don't want balloons or anything else violating U.S. sovereignty. These are not, the way that some critics and Republicans were talking about it, it was as if we were under attack. And, the next one was going to be a balloon filled with chemical weapons. Newt Gingrich said that this is a dry run for when they'll load up these things with biological weapons from Wuhan. I mean, just insanity. And this kind of talk should not be, there should not be concessions to this kind of talk. We both sides really should have been a lot more honest and clear about what this thing amounted to from the very beginning.
In our last minute or so, Fred, I think probably both in the U.S. and China, there are cooler heads and less cool heads. What are you hoping for to see the cooler heads on both sides prevail as we talk about this issue?
Well, look, I think for the United States to continue to have influence in the world and for certain global problems to be solved, we cannot be in a hostile relation with both Russia and China. We are unavoidably in a hostile relationship with Russia right now, and I don't see how that changes as long as Putin is in power. Therefore, we really do have to start at least finding some areas of engagement with China, and I think there are signs that China feels the same way. And so I think it's very important not to let these random flukes from getting in the way of this, and I hope that it's going to have to be the two presidents. I hope that they can have a summit very soon. Again, not to pretend that everything is hunky-dory between the two countries or to compromise our own interests and not to deny the fact that we are both at odds on a many, many things. But we have common interests as well, and we need to start figuring out ways to advance them.
Fred, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Sure, anytime. Thank you.
That's Fred Kaplan, the War Stories columnist at Slate, the author of 6 books. He joined us today to talk about national security, diplomacy, and balloons. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Susanna Michaels joins me in the studio. We're here today to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy, programs like Central Time. It's support from people like you that makes up the biggest piece of funding for the programs you value. That's why your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 can make such a big difference.
And now this hour is a great time to give, not only because we are talking about balloons, but because we have this dollar-for-dollar match. It's given by a group of current members, including someone in Lodi. And what it means is that when you give $50, it turns into $100 for WPR. You give $100, it turns into $200 for WPR. car, and so on. There is still plenty of room in the match for your gift. So take advantage of it right now when you support Wisconsin Public Radio programs with your gift of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And that last conversation, we took an issue. You may be seeing headlines about the original balloon story, things that have happened since then, and put that in a wider context of U.S.-China relations, the mistakes that can happen when random incidents can throw diplomatic negotiations into turmoil with a guest who has a lot of history looking at these kind of issues. This is the kind of conversation you can count on here on Central Time.
And I'll tell you something, setting these conversations up is not easy. The team does an amazing job. The guests like we had just now, they are not easy to reach, but the team did it. And it's your support that makes all that possible. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You make the many topics and guests possible. You choose an amount that works for you, and it will be doubled this hour when you make that gift.
More than 26,000 current WPR members are proud sustainers. That means they make ongoing monthly gifts to Wisconsin Public Radio.
And you, too, can provide a reliable stream of funding for the programs that you care about. So become a sustainer right now. Choose any amount, say $10 or $20 a month, and set it up to be ongoing. And that first year of gifts will be doubled. So it is so easy to do to become a sustainer at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
You count on us for great conversations. That's the main reason to give. Also, that dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now. Got a good start, but you're plenty of room for your gift to get matched. And grab the new WPR beanie. It's a hat with a WPR logo on a leather patch. Show off your support for the programs you value when you give $15 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we heard from Jeff in Green Bay, who says, I always feel great every time I give to my favorite radio station. Thank you, WPR. And thank you so much, Jeff. And because WPR is your favorite radio station, step up and make a gift now. It will be doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Can't do what we do without you. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up, we look at the chemical spill in Ohio and the current state of freight train safety with an expert on rail infrastructure and safety measures. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Susanna Michaels is with me at WPR. Listener contributions are the largest source of funding. Your gift keeps the programs you value, including this one, on the air. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And Rob, have I mentioned that we have a dollar-for-dollar match?
I recall something about that.
Yeah,
it was a big deal.
I really can't say it enough. We have up to $3,000 of matching money available right now. We really want you to get a piece of that. It's a great time to give because we have these current members who've put up this match, including a member in Lodi, and it is their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio programs. So double the impact of your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You go to the Ideas Network for smart conversations about compelling topics. You can count on hearing thought-provoking conversations every day. Because WPR is listener-supported public radio, your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 really does make a difference. It makes these conversations possible.
And think about what you spend money on every day. Maybe it's coffee. Maybe it's takeout. Maybe it's that bag of Cheetos from the vending machine. It all adds up, and it's easy to spend on things that are part of your routine.
Wisconsin Public Radio is part of your routine, too. It's your news source, your conversation starter, your place to learn. So spend some money on it today. Start with a dollar a day. That's $30 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing. You could win $250 to spend at your favorite technology store when you make a gift of any amount for the WPR programs you love. Upgrade your electronics or try something new. You'll have three chances to win. No contribution is necessary. You can enter by sharing your name, address, email, and phone number with WPR at 888-202-2552. Better yet, you're automatically entered when you make a donation of any amount. here's how.
Make that gift. Get entered into that drawing online at WPR.org. Takes just a couple few minutes there. Or call 888-202-2552. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels. Your support during this member drive makes the WPR programs you count on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount to give.
And it will be doubled this hour. What could be better? And in case you're concerned that making a gift is going to be a big, long production, let me put your mind at ease. Giving to WPR is easy. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
It takes just a few minutes to make your gift to Wisconsin Public Radio. Those few minutes are going to fund your daily listening each and every day. Your support right now really makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your gift will be matched. It'll be doubled.
Yeah. And there aren't that many important things you can accomplish in just a few minutes. You can't learn a language. You can't find a cure for a disease. These are things that take years. But you can make a difference in just a few minutes when you make your gift to Wisconsin Public Radio.
WPR is important to the fabric of our community here in Wisconsin. You hear news you can trust, enjoy a statewide connection with others, appreciate quality music and entertainment and conversations. Takes the entire community to make this possible for everybody. You can do your part in just a few minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, when you make your gift of any amount online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And I'm just going to say it again, folks. We do have this dollar-for-dollar match still in effect. There is a lot of room left in it for your gift to be matched. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support for WPR will go twice as far.
Get that gift matched and enter the drawing. Three lucky people today will win $250 to spend at their favorite technology store. Now, this is a real store. It's not just me with a bucket of wires from the TV I had 20 years ago. No, a proper store where you can spend this if you win, and you can get entered online at WPR.org/drawing without a donation, or the quick and easy way, make that donation, give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Dollar for dollar match in effect, that drawing, great radio coming your way each and every day. A lot of great reasons to give right now. Thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Some residents of East Palestine, Ohio, have reported headaches, rashes, and a lingering chemical odor after the February 3rd derailment of train cars, carrying some of them hazardous chemicals, and the fires that followed. The Environmental Protection Agency says that the air in the community and the municipal water supply are safe. Chemicals spilled in nearby waterways, killing thousands of fish, and a few communities that get their water supply from the Ohio River temporarily switched to alternate sources. Between 2015 and 2022, the Federal Railroad Administration investigated 110 train derailments with a hazardous material spill. The Association of American Railroads says more than 99.9% of all hazardous material moved by trains arrives at its destination safely. Alan Zaremski is a professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering and director of the Railroad Engineering and Safety Program at the University of Delaware. Alan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Before we look at wider concerns about the state of rail safety, let's dig into this derailment from what we've seen so far, and I assume an investigation will be ongoing, but what do we know about what might have caused this derailment?
Okay. Well, as you say, the investigation is ongoing, and the National Transportation Safety Board has been on the scene actively starting their investigation. But there is some information that they've released, and there's some information that gives us an indication of what the cause is. It looks like this was a derailment caused by a overheated railroad wheel bearing that actually burned through the axle and caused the axle to break or fracture under the train, causing a derailment.
How rare is an incident like this?
First of all derailments are rare. Mm-hmm. Derailments are rare almost by definition. But these are unusual derailments. I think we get about maybe 10 or 15 of these a year across the entire United States, across 500 million train miles of train activity in the U.S. which makes it a very, very low probability of events. And of those, only a very tiny fraction of those actually involve hazardous materials.
That said, for people in East Palestine, one is clearly too many. What kind of safeguards are there to try to prevent even this rare incident from happening and then resulting in a spill like this?
Okay. Railroads try to do multiple things to prevent derailments. In the case of a hazardous material spill or a hazardous material event, there are two distinct mechanisms involved. First, it's the derailment, and then there's the breach of the tank car after the derailment. So let's start with the derailment. Railroads spend a lot of time, money, resources on inspection and technology and other technologies to try to prevent derailments. For example, this particular derailment, which is an overheated bearing detector, derailment, railroads have special detectors, infrared detectors, mounted in the track every 25 miles or so, where they actually measure the temperature of the bearings to see if they're getting too hot. And if they do find that a bearing is hot, the system is automated. It sends an immediate message to the crew, basically saying, stop the train and go out and check. So this type of technology exists throughout the United States, actually exists throughout the world. And that's part of the sophisticated tools used to inspect trains and track and to prevent a derailment. On those rare occasions when a derailment does happen, there's a second layer of protection, so to speak, which is the specialized tank cars used in the carrying of hazardous materials. These tank cars have all sorts of protective features to it. They're usually double walled with a thermal insulating barrier in between to keep fire or heat from penetrating inside into the interior of the tank car. They have head shields, which are big plates at the end of the tank car to prevent any punctures. There's specialized protection for the different release valves that are used to load and unload the tank cars. So as a result, even when there is a derailment, which is rare to start with, a breach in the tank car is even rarer. So I agree with you. It's no consolation to the people in Ohio that they happen to have the one event that happened like this. But these events are extremely rare, and usually you get events like this in one in multiple years. And, you know, that's the type of frequency you see something like this.
Now, in the case where the rare derailment has happened, that rare puncture of a hazardous material carrying tank car, I wonder about, how do rail lines communicate with local fire departments? If I'm a fire department, I know, okay, this factory over here produces this and uses these chemicals, or this agricultural facility uses these things and so on. Do they know, are they ready for what might be shipped through their jurisdictions on a train?
Yes. There are a couple of things the railroads do to help first responders. The first thing is the crew carries a complete list of everything in the train. So they know what's in every car. Number two, there is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week chemical spill hotline that's maintained so that in the event of a catastrophic event, and it's not just railroads, it can be the highways as well, there is a emergency phone number that any first responder can call. And the crew, by the way, also has these phone numbers, and that would give them specific guidance as to the properties of the chemical, special measures they may have to take in fighting the fire or preventing a release, and that type of information. In addition to that, the railroads sponsor a significant amount of training for first responders. There is a transportation test center in Pueblo, Colorado, that runs very realistic hazmat and fire prevention training four first responders, and they go, and thousands of first responders go through that training each year. In addition to that, railroads invariably reach out to first responders, particularly on routes where there is movement, where there's a significant movement of hazardous materials. And they likewise reach out to the first responders and provide instruction. In fact, I understand now that there's also an app that they that they've made available as well. So not only do you know, can use their phone line, there's a real-time app that can be used for finding out what's what the properties of the different chemicals involved are.
We're talking about railroad safety with Alan Zaremski, director of the Railroad Engineering and Safety Program and professor at the University of Delaware. Want to give a listen to the Senate delegation from Ohio, starting with Democrat Sherrod Brown talking to CNN, raising questions, he said, about corporate greed.
That's why I'm angry when I look at these companies lay people off. They never look out for their workers. They never look out for their communities. They look out for stock buybacks and dividends. Something's wrong with the corporate America, and something's wrong with Congress.
And Alan, we had these negotiations over railroad staffing during the near-miss strike, some back and forth between presidential administrators over administrations, excuse me, over how many, how much staffing should be on trains. Is staffing a problem?
Let's take the Ohio the derailment as an example. There is no evidence whatsoever to indicate that staffing or lack of manpower contributed in any way, shape, or form to this derailment. The information that I've seen, and by the way, I've seen nothing other than publicly available information, so I don't have access to anything special. But the information I've seen suggests that both the hot bearing detectors in the vicinity of the derailment were all working. The crew was, was alert, active, when they became aware of the incident. And unfortunately, they didn't become aware of the incident until the actual derailment happened. It sounded like they took all the proper actions. Again, I'm just going by what I saw in the media, but for what I've seen, it looks like the crew, behaved quite well. And I don't really see any manpower effect in this accident. Now, if you look in general in safety accidents, the railroad, we're not seeing any major uptick in safety incidences, derailment instances. The data seems to suggest that that railroads are taking their safety seriously, and there's no. From what I can understand, there's no let up on the part of the Federal Railway Administration in terms of their safety oversight of the railroads, because in addition to the railroads themselves, railroads are overseen by the U.S. Department of Transportation Federal Railway Administration Office of Safety, which has specific and very legal capabilities in terms of overseeing railroads and looking for potential problems relating to safety.
Let's bring on a caller. Mark is with us in Two Rivers. Mark, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. You had mentioned, 99.99% of the products that are shipped by railroads make it to their destination safely. And that may be true, but I care more about the 0.01% that don't. And then your guest talked about hot bearing detectors. Well, if the hot bearing detectors were working, they certainly didn't do their job, because they didn't warn the train operators in time. And finally, I grew up in East Central Illinois, and there was an event that occurred due to a hot bearing and a train derailment. There were bloody explosions and almost wiped that town off the map. And I grew up in the town that was the next stop along the way, 7 miles away, and it would have been my hometown. So I have sort of a vested interest in this as well.
Mark, thanks for the call. That number was, I think, just a sort of a vague number for the Association of American Railroads. But Mark's point, one, it doesn't seem like the ball bearing detector worked. And even if it's a rare event, the damage can be pretty severe. What do you say to Mark, Alan?
Okay, so let's start the first one first. All the indications were the overheating bearing detectors were working. The problem with overheated bearings is that they can heat up very, 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 very quickly in the Bering Seas. So there's actually a lot of work being done in the research area and looking at additional supplemental technology to try to even improve upon the existing overheated bearing technologies. But again, the problem we're dealing with is, and this is the second issue, there's always a level of risk. Unfortunately, when I've been working in this industry 50 years, and there are a lot of, and the same is true of all modes of transportation. Nobody's going to claim to eliminate risk, but what we want to do, what we strive to do, is reduce risk. So if we're 99.99% catching it, we want to make it 99.9999% catching it. Then we want to go to 99.99999% catching it. That's what you do, and you do that by improving the technology, by improving the facilities, by improving the levels of maintenance. But remember, this is not an event that happens very often, and so you have to be able to mobilize your resources to try to prevent that. And at the moment, there's no technology that will guarantee no failures at all, be it railroads or airplanes or trucks or automobiles. Those technology at the moment doesn't exist in any mode of transportation. But the railroad industry is very serious about safety, is very serious about trying to reduce the occurrences. And I very much appreciate the fact that in Ohio at the moment, they're the one that happened.
Alan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today. That's Alan Zaremski, professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering, director of the Railroad Engineering and Safety Program at the University of Delaware, looking at what we know in the aftermath of the train derailment in Ohio. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Susanna Michaels is with me. Listener contributions are the biggest source of funding for WPR. Your gift keeps the programs you count on, including Central Time, on the air. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Susanna, an extra great reason to give in this last few minutes of the hour.
Yeah, super califragilistic, extra great. We have this challenge match in effect right now. We have current members, including one from Lodi, who will match your gift dollar for dollar. There's plenty of room left in this challenge match for your gift. So take advantage of the match. Step up with your gift to Wisconsin Public Radio right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give $15 a month or more, get that matched, and also get the new WPR beanie. It's a cozy olive green hat with our WPR logo on a leather patch. Great way to show off your love for WPR and keep your head warm. And again, get that dollar for dollar match all when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you have already made your annual contribution or you make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, thank you. You are the backbone of WPR.
If you haven't, it's a great time to do it right now with that challenge match. Join tens of thousands of dedicated WPR members when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you support WPR, it is an investment that gives back, whether it's the reliable news, the statewide conversations like that amazing conversation we just heard about the train derailment. You really can't go wrong with a gift to WPR. It is a no-risk investment. So if you've never given before, become our next new member right now.
We heard from Kendall in Milwaukee, who says Rob's guests and topics are always spot on. I also really appreciate the morning show. Kendall, thanks so much for starting and finishing your work day, maybe, with Wisconsin Public Radio and for giving. How about you? Do you count on the talk shows here on the Ideas Network each day? We count on you to help pay for it. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It is such a great time to give because we do have this dollar-for-dollar match available to you. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
Still room for your gift to get matched. Help us take full advantage of that. Get entered into a drawing for one of three gift cards for technology stores. It is a fantastic time to give. Do it right now. It takes just 2-3 minutes, give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.